Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing the perils of investing apps, pandemic pay raises, and making millions on Fiverr.
Right, Joel, this is our Friday Flight episode where every week we tackle a few of our favorite headlines that we saw come across our phone screens or computer screens. But they're stories that specifically have to do with our personal finances, our money. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But first, you've got some news that you want to share, right?
Yeah, I do. So
better not back out. I thought you were going to share it. But.
No, not everybody knows this, but I have, for the longest time, I've worked in radio, right? And for over 14 years. And my day job was working as a producer on the Clark Howard radio show. And Clark is a dear friend, and he has been creating personal finance money content for over 30 years now. And he's done an amazing job in the space. The dude is just brilliant beyond belief. And as of this past week, I am no longer working for Clark anymore. And exciting. It's bittersweet. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's bittersweet. But it's something that you've been working towards, you know, for the past couple of years now, as we've sort of been like, oh, is this something that we can do? Like, is the show, is How to Money something that's going to be legit?
Right.
And it's something that, I mean, that I've worked towards more gradually, I guess, being able to kind of taper off my work. But for you, it's either on or it's off, right?
It's true. Like,
we knew that for you, we were going to come to a point in time where things were going to look very different for you.
Right, yeah. And for you, I mean, that change has happened a little more quickly than you thought it was going to because of the pandemic too, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, wedding photography was on a steep demise.
Oh, yeah. The timing, honestly, could not have been more perfect for us to kind of ramp up the show, start actually, I mean, let's be honest here, we're starting to make income, you know, from the show through advertising. That's how it is that we're able to generate some income from the show. And so we actually started doing that last year for the first time. And it's like, oh, wow, this is something that it's not just a side hustle that you and I are interested in. It's something that's a little more legit.
Not just a labor of love, although it still is a labor of love.
Yeah.
We're actually, able to feed our families based on this podcast.
Yeah.
And so, one, I want to say big thanks to our listeners for supporting the podcast by listening, by being a part of the community. Two, I want to say thank you to Clark and all the people I worked with over there because, you know, my money education and, you know, my interest in personal finance really started over there.
That's right.
And it was honed in those 14 years. And so, big thanks to Clark and everything that he's done for me and my family over the years. And I'm looking forward to being able to go all in essentially on How to Money the rest of this year and decades, hopefully, moving forward. So
whoa, decades. I'm not sure if I signed up for that, buddy.
Oh, you didn't see the paper I made you sign? No, you're signed up for at least two decades.
Was that like a point you like slid in there after the fact? You're like, yeah, actually there was a quick revision. Just go ahead and sign this.
I made you sign one of those like Patrick Mahomes contracts, man. It's like 10 years long. So
to clarify, you and I don't have contracts that we that we force each other to sign. But back to your first point, which was thanks to all of our listeners out there. Yeah, I want to say that as well. We could not do the show without all of you. And again, now that we're kind of going all in, we want to make sure that you know that we're thankful for you guys. Don't go anywhere, please. But I'm definitely excited, man. I know, you're going to miss, you know, kind of working with some of those legends over there in the radio space. But I'm here, baby. My arms are wide open.
You're the new legend, buddy. New legend.
I am excited for the future of How to Money for sure, man.
Me too, man. Me too. All right. Yeah. So now that we got that out of the way, Matt, let's get on to the Friday Flight. Let's talk about the financial stories we found interesting this week. Of course, I want to start this week off with a little nod to Costco. They just announced that,
per usual,
they sold 101 million rotisserie chickens last year and 151 million hot dog soda combos. And I got to say, my family, we definitely bought our fair share of both last year.
Barf. What's crazy is I don't understand. I mean, a lot of Costco's, they didn't have in-store seating when it came to the food court. And so what were you like, would you guys get your food and then just like walk around like you're at a carnival or a fair or something like that?
No, because you had to have your mask on inside. So we would literally go in and buy it. We would walk outside and
like hang out outside,
find
a little
spot to sit outside and eat our hot dogs.
Oh, it's so good.
That's about as nerdy as it gets.
I guess that does explain it a little bit. Well, speaking of deals, man, President's Day is coming up, right? And just a quick reminder that there are President's Day sales coming up as well. This is always one of the best times of year to buy a mattress, specifically, but furniture or even winter clothing as well. You know, it can be really helpful to take advantage of seasonal sales. You know, buying a jacket now for next winter, for instance, makes a lot more sense than waiting until that first cold snap later in 2021. You know, at that point, you'll pay full price when instead you can save 50 to maybe even 70% now. I'm definitely going to take this opportunity to stock up on my long johns again, make sure I'm set for next winter.
Hey, this is the time. They're trying to like clear those 2020 model long johns out, you know, making room for the fancy new 2021 model. So
I've got my natural, my gray, and my black. Like those, I got my three sets.
That's all you need, really.
I need two of every set now, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, make it happen.
I will.
All right. And two, I found this story fascinating, Matt. Many of those deals, of course, that people are going to find for President's Day are online. And there was an interesting story about who's doing the most online shopping these days. It turns out that older Americans are taking to online shopping like a duck to water.
Ooh.
Yeah. The Washington Post reports that the fastest growing category of e-commerce shoppers is people 65 and older. Retirement age Americans started to gravitate to online shopping out of necessity, of course, during COVID. But apparently they've stuck with it. They like it. They think it's pretty easy. So it's just kind of cool to see that shift. I was just remarking to Emily the other day that my dad is like a better texter than I am. I think I told you that too. Like he knows where to put the emojis and he's like, and I don't know.
He knows all the subtext with each emoji, which ones to avoid.
Yeah. And I feel like his texting game has gotten so much better over the years and mine is still like weak. Like I just, the thumbs up is like the only one emoji that I use. That's like my go-to. And
the thumbs up and the strong, the arm flex. That's the one I use a lot too. I don't know. I like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to see, you know, my parents become more technologically adept, and it looks like that's the case for, you know, other people's parents too, like people in their 60s, right? They're getting with it when it comes to online shopping and e-commerce.
Yeah. A lot of boomers, a lot of folks are taking to online shopping. But dude, I had a tough time getting past in that story. We'll make sure to link to it in our show notes, but they'd interviewed somebody and he was talking about how their household of four, how every month they start off with a $1,200 grocery order.
Oh my gosh,
dude. $1,200 for four people. Like, how do you actually do that? I mean, he made it sound like that.
He's
definitely
not shopping at Aldi.
No! he's definitely not planning out his meals. I'm like, what? I mean, it wouldn't be too difficult, I guess, to spend that money on, you know, you can spend your money on just really high quality meat, things like that. But even still, I'm just like, that is so much stinking money for your first grocery run of the month. Like, yeah. He made it sound like that throughout the month, they also will go back to buy fresh veggies and milk, you know, meat, things like that, things that spoil, but that no matter what, there's always like an initial first of the month $1,200 run, which kind of blew my mind.
The restock the pantry run.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's out of control.
Yeah, I'm like, how do you do that? But I guess it's possible. Let's talk about investing. Now, let's talk about some financial tech. Folks that use apps to trade stocks are evidently more likely to engage in risky and what's called lottery type behavior, according to a new study from some University of Indiana Business School professors, which is really interesting, man. You know, obviously, we haven't seen any of that around here yet.
No, I don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. That doesn't apply.
We have consistently said that many of those apps, that they're not bad, but that they can be used poorly, you know, and oftentimes they are used poorly. They can encourage bad behavior when it comes to our investments. It's true that some of the innovation that companies like M1 and Robinhood that they've created, that they are good for consumers and investors, but using apps, you know, on our phone to trade stocks and ETFs can cause us to get a little too interested in investing and lead us towards making some foolish choices when it comes to our investments. And so, I mean, basically, the more you trade, the worse off your portfolio is going to be. We've seen that time and time again, and specifically given with GameStop and AMC, all the meme stocks out there.
Yeah, I think you call them GameStop, but that's right, man. GameStop,
GameStonks. Stonks.
But yeah, that's so true. And it's interesting, Matt. I feel like just like people might want to take a social media app completely off their phone in order to help them from engaging in social media too much, from wasting too much time during the day. If it's on there, you're going to use it, right? It's almost impossible to avoid. And so deleting it altogether is probably the best course of action. I think the same thing might be true for some of these investing apps that are on your phone. It's, again, not that it's not good, but maybe you say, I'm only going to check this out on my desktop, because if it's on my phone, I'm going to be tempted to look at it 3, 4, 5 times a day.
Yeah.
And really, like, you need to be looking at your investments once a month, like once a quarter. You know, like we would say the more you avoid it, the better off you're going to be, not the more you're engaged in it, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, setting limits for yourself. In my case, I actually, so I've got a Robinhood account. I do not have the app on my phone for that reason.
Yeah.
You know, if there's something I want to invest in, it's going to take me sitting down to the computer. It's going to, you know, I'm going to have to log in that way. I don't just get to pull my phone out of my pocket, you know, hit the app, and then make some ill-advised moves based on emotion. Yeah. I'm going to keep myself from doing that.
You don't want to do that on the fly.
No.
You want to put some thought into it. And also, too, the more that you trade, the more likely you are to trigger taxable events inside of a brokerage account, right? The tax code is far more favorable if you hold an asset for at least a year. You're going to pay taxes on gains at the more favorable capital gains tax rate instead of at your income tax rate. But if you hold a stock only for a few days, weeks, or even a few months, not only are you engaging in riskier investing behavior, but you're likely to get a bigger tax bill on those gains too. The Wall Street Journal, Matt, actually profiled a Robinhood trader who just got his 1099, and it's confusing, he said, and it's also 34 pages long. And so he's like, I think I'm going to need to hire someone to do my taxes this year.
Pages and pages of all of his buys and sells.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is a mess. I need some help now. And I think like those are a number of reasons that why we suggest keeping things simple when it comes to investing. I think I'd be overwhelmed if I got a 34-page 1099 too.
I want a 34-page anything.
Right, exactly.
Except for a book that I want to read. You
right.
know? And on the note of taxes, with tax season upon us, a lot of folks might be wondering if the stimulus checks that they've received are taxable. Well, good news, they are not. So there's nothing else you need to do if you received those payments. But now for the bad news. Unemployment or jobless benefits are federally taxed. And so hopefully when you signed up for your unemployment, you chose to have taxes deducted. Or if you didn't choose that, you've been setting money aside for taxes, but you can expect to receive a 1099-G, which will list out all of your unemployment income. And you'll need to report that number when it does come time for you to file your taxes.
All right. Taxes stink. Let's not talk about them anymore. Let's move on to something else. Maybe some better news that we saw this week.
Yeah.
Kroger and Target are joining the ranks of companies like Aldi, Dollar General, Trader Joe's, Chobani. Is that how you say it? I always forget.
The yoga, yeah.
Chobani. Is that how you say it? Okay.
Chobani.
Right. they're going to all pay their employees to get a COVID shot. Kroger is giving employees $100 to get vaccinated, and Target's offering up to 4 hours of pay so that employees can get their vaccine shots, plus a free Lyft ride to and from.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like a free ride like that, like that's kind of the cherry on top. Like that's what it's like, you know what? I wasn't going to do this, but oh, free Lyft ride. Yeah. It's like, all right, sure.
Oh, someone's going to pick me up and take me there? Cool.
It seems special.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like, man, everything in economics revolves around incentives. Like we do things based on certain incentives. And the more we can incentivize people to get their COVID vaccination, and you know, these employers that are doing it, I just applaud it because that's going to help us get there more quickly, right? Get to the point where we have enough of people nationwide vaccinated. It's great for these employees. It's great for the customers of those stores. And it's just great for our country as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, it's great for science too.
Right.
Right. You know, and if you want to be a part of helping another new vaccine get approved while making some extra money, it might make sense to join a clinical trial. I was talking to my neighbor. He's an infectious disease doctor. And he's like, hey, dude, you might be interested. If you get the shot, you'll get paid money. So I got the details from him. And Novavax here in Atlanta is paying participants to get a shot. It could be the actual vaccine, but it could also be a placebo. And then they are compensating folks $125 per visit. There are multiple visits after that where you'd go in and, you know, they'll ask you a bunch of questions. And you'll continue to get paid, though, up to $1,700.
Wow.
That's legit money right there. And so it does vary depending on the city and whether or not Novavax is running a trial near where you live. But you can find more information or sign up for some of those trials or look into the studies at preventcovid.org.
Yeah, put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah.
All right, we got some more stories we need to get to, including, of course, the ludicrous headline of the week. And it's truly ludicrous this week. I gotta say, I read it. I almost cried with tears of anger, though. Tears of anger. We'll get to that and more right after this break.
All right, we are back from the break, and Joel, it is time for our ludicrous headline of the week. This week, we have a headline from Fortune Magazine, which I feel like they should have to rename their magazine after this headline. But
here's how you don't get a fortune.
Yes, seriously. So the title of this article was Financial Sacrilege. Saving for retirement could be a mistake for 20 and 30 somethings. Dude, what?
Yes, basically, it's so dumb to save for retirement in your 20s and 30s.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, you should wait until you're 40 years old before you start saving for retirement. So the piece was basically based on a study from the National Bureau of Economic Research, and that paper took into account what the authors called the quote-unquote total life satisfaction. Basically, the authors were saying that cash-strapped, you know, 20-something-year-olds who are likely to see their wages, you know, go up in the future should prioritize enjoying life now over investing those precious few dollars that they have for their futures. You know, count on the fact that your salary is going to go up, you know, through the roof 20 years from now before you start investing. Instead, take all that money now and just blow it.
Exactly.
Great advice.
That's wonderful advice. I mean, I don't even know why we're still creating this show when
just leave it to fortune.
When advice like that is out there, you know? And I think, Matt, How to Money listeners know that saving money and enjoying life are not mutually exclusive. You don't forfeit the good life by saving and investing now. You can do both at the same time, right?
Yes.
Like, you can walk and chew gum. You can save for your retirement and have some good times while you're doing it.
Yeah, well, then on the flip side of it as well, do they think that once you hit 40 that you no longer want to have fun?
Right.
Like,
well, I guess now you have the disposable income is what they're saying.
Well, to invest like crazy and then also have fun. I mean, you got to have balance. And that's what we talk about on the show. There are ways to do both. Like you said, we want you to have your cake and eat it too.
I mean, I remember, you know, when I was first coming out of college and part-time job, or even then my first full-time job, and the salaries were abysmal. And like, for a while I was working two jobs, right, in order to make ends meet and also try to be able to meet some of my savings goals. But I'm so glad that I started saving early. Like, I would never ever go back to my younger self and be like, ah, it's not worth it, don't do it, you know? Because I've seen the benefits pay off over the last decade and a half, right? And obviously you can't afford everything out there, right, that might bring you some happiness. But that's true, again, like you were talking about, Matt, no matter what age and income level you're at, right?
Yeah, there's always going to be something.
Yeah, and we have to disagree with the authors of this study. That they're probably fancy people working at the National Bureau of Economic Research. They're fancier than we are, but I got to say, we're not with you on this. You should start saving early on in your career. If you wait until you're two decades into your working career, at that point you will have missed out on a huge opportunity to build wealth for yourself and to get those compounding returns that are oh so crucial in those early years, Matt. And I know too, a lot of our friends who are in the FIRE movement would say, we're retired by 40. Like, we've been saving so diligently for those first 15 to 20 years that we don't have to save anymore. Now we can be done working if we want to be. So I don't know. That just seems like really poor advice. And I don't know how that paper became a thing. And so that is why that is the ludicrous headline of the week.
That's right. Yeah. So let's go ahead and put some numbers to this whole idea, right? You mentioned compounding interest, and I ran the numbers. And if you start contributing to a Roth IRA at age 20, right? So they said basically to not invest from, you know, in your 20s and 30s. Instead, wait until you're 40.
But what if you took the exact opposite approach?
Yes. If you took the exact opposite approach and
invested every year throughout your 20s and 30s.
And not even in brokerage accounts too, but just maxing out your Roth IRA. We're talking $6,000 a year. At the end of those 20 years, by the time you're 40, you're going to have $246,000 saved up. But here's the thing. If you stop contributing at that point altogether and you no longer save any additional money, but then you allow that money to compound until you're 65 years old, you're going to have $1.3 million at age 65.
There you go.
Right? 1.3. So remember that number. And so that's for the early investor. Now, for the live life now, invest later investor, if that person were to start maxing out a Roth IRA at age 40 and contribute all the way from age 40 until 65 years old, they're only going to have $380,000 at age 65. In order to reach the same amount of savings, that $1.3 million, they would have to triple their contributions every single year in order to get anywhere near that $1.3
million. Yeah.
And so ultimately, in the end, they would have had to save way more money to have the same amount by age 65. I don't know about you, but I would rather take the low and slow approach. You know, let's start investing as soon as you can, as it's possible.
Oh, I think you do know about me. I think you know I'm in that same boat with you.
You're all about it too, man. But we wanted to point out, though, how important it is to get investing early. It's not going to feel like you're moving the needle much, but we want you to get investing as early as you can.
Yeah, those small steps early on have an outsized impact. By the time you're 65, by the time you're hitting that age in which you don't want to work anymore.
Most definitely.
Yeah, so if you are a How to Money listener and you see a headline that's, you know, on this level of ludicrous, please send it our way. We'll try to feature it in a future episode.
Yes.
All right. Let's go on to a couple more stories, though, Matt. Let's talk about the economy and the job market. The economy continues to do well despite the effects of COVID. There's a new survey that we saw this week from Skynova that highlighted the fact that many who lost their job earlier on in the pandemic have actually found themselves now in a higher paying job. That survey actually found that 65% of people who lost their job but continued looking for work had been able to land a job that paid more than the place where they were previously at, than their previous job. And in fact, employees who were laid off and then hired into new jobs averaged a 16% salary increase. So, I mean, even though things are shaky in some sectors of the economy, the job market is still bright for a whole lot of people. And I just wanted to encourage people out there. There was a thread just yesterday in our Facebook group where a guy was like, I'm kind of tired of my job. And he asked all of our listeners, like, what do you do? And do you like it or not? And there was this like 100 plus comments in there, people telling each other what they do and whether or not they love their job. And it was like really fun to watch. Maybe you can gain some inspiration from that thread.
Yeah.
But you might be seeing some headlines about unemployment and the job market. But I will say, in many cases, people are finding great work and getting paid more by moving to another sector or taking a new job. So don't have a defeatist attitude. Start looking. You might find something better that's going to end up paying you more too.
Yeah, that's right, man. And some of those struggling sectors as well are starting to experience a meaningful recovery as well. You know, like, I don't want to be too optimistic, but it certainly does feel like the kind of like the beginning of the end of COVID, doesn't it?
It feels like that. It's so hard to actually like say that out loud with words, but
yeah,
it feels
I'm
like
sure
that.
Folks are like, dude, don't jinx it. But like you see the massive decrease of new reported cases of COVID, and it's certainly encouraging to me. But dude, anecdotally, we were talking to a local brewery owner here in Atlanta, and he was really happy with where things stand with his business right now. And he mentioned that, you know, 2021 could be their best year yet. We certainly hope so. We love that brewery. And a recent article in USA Today mentioned how many hotels are starting to see guests return, and they're starting to do more hiring, especially for temporary workers. That's a good sign of things to come in the job market and for the economy as a whole. Hopefully these really hard hit sectors in business will start to see a renaissance of interest as we quickly vaccinate huge swaths of our nation, as temperatures increase, as we're able to spend less time indoors. In our case, you know, we stare face to face, but we've been podding. We've been cohorting this entire time.
Man, you got to have your COVID pod, you know, like, and
could you imagine, like, what if you
sure hope you chose the right people at the beginning of it too, by the way. What if you didn't, man? That's tough.
That's true.
But we chose well.
Yes.
All right, let's get on to like pay. We're talking about employment, but let's talk about pay too. There's been political talk when it comes to raising the minimum wage, but and we don't want to comment on the political situation. I don't really care about that as much, but let's get nerdy for a minute and talk about efficiency wage theory.
Ooh.
This is an idea by economists that when you increase wages to above market rates, that those increases actually pay for themselves through higher employee retention, worker motivation, and productivity. And the Wall Street Journal actually cited several studies that support this theory recently, as individual companies have experimented as they've sought to make their companies more successful. And this makes sense. Like, who doesn't like seeing that they received a pay raise? And maybe it motivates
sure.
you to like work a little harder, do a little better at work, crush that sales goal even more. Or maybe, you know, stay an extra 15, 20 minutes in order to get something done that otherwise you might have like left undone. But the fact is that these experiments have taken place on a small scale, individual companies essentially raising the pay of their employees to incentivize this behavior and to create a bond of loyalty that's really effective. And I don't know whether this translates into a higher national minimum wage being the right response, but at least
getting back to the political talk there.
But it at least works. It seems to work for a lot of companies implementing it on their own business level, right?
Yeah, I mean, I also am unsure of the effectiveness if this were a national thing, right? Because unfortunately, I think so much of how we view how we're doing is by looking at those around us. And if you are working harder yourself and you're able to manage higher pay, that's encouraging, right? Just like you said, it leads to higher, you know, retention, higher productivity. But like, if everybody around you gets a pay bump, it's like, okay, cool. Like, certainly you did get more pay, but in relation to those around you, maybe even in relation to prices that might be rising, it may not feel as significant, right?
Yeah, it may not have quite the same impact.
Exactly. Yeah. As well, speaking of pay, CNBC just ran an article about a 35-year-old teacher who made $2 million writing resumes on Fiverr, which we're a fan of.
Yeah. Man.
This guy, his name's Richard Lambert. He was teaching English overseas and then decided to make use of his background in resume writing on the side. So he made a Fiverr listing back in 2014 and then went full-time in 2016 because he was getting so much work. Just in those handful of years since then, he's made over $2 million. So it just goes to show that, you know, over time, your side hustle can truly provide some real income and turn into something completely legit. Sort of like How to Money, although we have not made $2 million.
No, we haven't.
At least not yet.
Richard, we're trying, though. Yeah.
We just want to be like Richard.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, how cool is that?
So awesome.
I get so much joy out of seeing someone's side hustle turn into their full-time thing because it's so darn successful. So those stories are always fun to read. I heard something recently, too, Matt, about not starting something unless you're willing to give it a solid go of at least 5 years. And I think there's so much truth to that, right? Like success doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, Richard saw this too. Like, a couple of years, he's like, all right, 2 years is pretty quick to be able to make that your full-time gig. Oftentimes, if you want to start a side hustle and you really, really want it to be successful, you got to commit for quite a while. If you give it 6 months or a year or 2 years even, usually that's not enough time to build something that is going to allow you to escape your day job. But if you're passionate enough about it, I feel like for a lot of people, that 5 years is going to go by quick as you're building it up so that you can, you know, escape and go do that full time.
I feel like that was something that was written by a boomer versus like millennials and Gen Zers are like, dude, 5 years, that may as well be an eternity.
Yeah.
But I will agree with that. I mean, there's a good chance that it probably will take at least longer than you think it will. And so, yeah, you may not realize how close you are to actually turning a profit or realizing something that will completely change how you're able to do business,
or
right?
Getting on Oprah's radar or something like that. You know?
Exactly.
I think your TikTok channel, though, Matt, is going to take off way quicker than 5 years.
I'm just waiting on you to join Clubhouse, so. which we haven't talked about, by the way.
No, we haven't.
I don't think we're going to do that. I wanted to mention real quick a note on healthcare. Open enrollment ended back in December, but Joe Biden signed an executive order which will fire things back up. Open enrollment will begin this Monday, February 15th, and end 3 months later on May 15th. As millions of folks have lost their jobs due to COVID, that also means millions have also likely lost their health care since so many people get their health care through their employer. And so keep an eye out for that. If you are in that situation, just we want you to know that it's not a scam. You're used to seeing open enrollment typically towards the end of the year, but now you're seeing it at the beginning of the year. What's going on with that? It's legit. And so make sure that if you do have questions or you're looking for more information, even if you're looking to switch providers, that's something that you can do now. This is open to anybody who even now has a plan through the marketplace. You can actually switch plans as well. So head over to healthcare.gov for more information there.
There you go. All right, let's quickly, Matt, before we end this episode, let's talk about Valentine's Day. It's coming up this weekend.
That's right.
And I kind of wanted to know, yeah, what's your take on Valentine's Day? And maybe do we have any like money-saving information for our listeners when it comes to taking care of their significant other, showing them that they care this Valentine's Day?
Well, what I think of when it comes to Valentine's Day is up the street from us on the corner. Oftentimes, they set up these tents and there are these giant stuffed animals sitting in like these giant baskets and they're full of candy. They're wrapped in plastic. And I don't even want to know how much those things go for, but I'm guessing they go for a lot of money because folks are like, oh, crap, it's Valentine's Day. So they pull over and they buy something. But that's the kind of Valentine's Day that you and I try to steer away from, right?
Yeah.
Like our family, it's not that I'm against love or sharing that I love my family with them. It's just the consumption associated with it, right? And in particular, I think when it comes to like with kids, they see those things on the side of the road, or they see some of the different things that is encouraged by our culture. And so in my mind, I think what's important is that we make sure that we do something, even if it's just sharing with them how much we love them, something like that, even just like writing a letter, like that only takes a few minutes sitting down. My kids love seeing cursive handwriting, even though they can't really read it. They're like, what's that letter? I'm like, I'm sorry. That's how daddy writes cursive. But even something as small as that, totally free, but it still makes it clear that they're loved. And I think it's our responsibility, certainly, to make sure that we do that. Not necessarily to buy something way over the top as part of that consumption-fueled lifestyle, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And Valentine's Day, for Emily and I, we just have not really given it much thought over the years. We haven't done much for it. I try to get her flowers on the reg as opposed to getting her this like massive bouquet like on one special day.
When they're especially pricey.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Exactly. And I think that's another thing people need to know is that like sometimes going out to eat or getting flowers right now is going to cost, it's going to cost a whole lot more this weekend.
It's
going to
come with a premium.
And so maybe, yeah, write that sweet note and be like, we're going out to dinner a week from now. And
or 2 months from now
yeah.
when we don't have to worry about the masks
yeah,
as much.
Exactly. And Katie in our Facebook group mentioned getting 50-cent or $1 cards at Dollar Tree. Trader Joe's also, I mentioned this before on the show, has excellent cheap cards. There are just like so many ways to make your significant other feel special without dropping a ton of money on one day. You don't want to be the kind of person that like if you're used to celebrating it together that lets Valentine's Day slip by completely and you're like, oh no, we just don't celebrate that anymore. Like, but like find a way to talk about it together and say, yeah. Hey, like the way we've been doing it, maybe it wasn't cost effective. Maybe we can create our own Valentine's Day tradition that yeah. It's like a picnic in the park or something like that. There's just, yeah, so many ways again to do it for cheap or free. And I want to encourage people in that direction because, yeah, you don't want to be the person buying the giant teddy bear because you forgot. And there's this high expectation placed on a holiday where it's kind of manufactured in a way,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. And it's just not, it's not about the consumption of it. It's, I mean, who actually sees that and where they know that maybe their significant other put zero thought into it and actually is like, oh yeah, that's actually what I want.
Right.
Like, no, like what they want is the thought and the time and the effort, right, that goes into it. And so, yeah, I think what we're encouraging folks to do is like, we don't want folks to be Grinches, right, and just to like shut it down. We'd rather see folks take proactive steps where, like you said, Jill, like they're kind of coming up with their own thing and not just shutting it down. Because if you're just shutting it down, then it's like, well, what's going on here? Like, are we on the rocks? Like, yeah, something feels weird.
Right. Yeah. We don't want to cause you any relationship harm here.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Don't send us emails if
but hey,
if you're like, Matt and Joel said, I don't need to buy this.
Yeah. If you screw up your relationship, that's on you. That's not on us. Okay. But there are ways to do it. Just know this. There are ways to do it where you're not spending too much money and you still show your loved one, your partner, your kids that you care, that you love them.
That's so, right.
All right. Well, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks that want show notes for this episode, well, you can go to howtomoney.com. We have links to some of those articles, some of those studies that we mentioned.
That's right. And so we hope you have a great weekend, whether or not it does include any Valentine's Day plans. And we'll see you back here on Monday where we get to actually sit down and talk with Jacob Goldstein about his new book about money.
About money.
Big surprise.
So
money.
Meta.
But that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.